From Illinois Public Radio in Springfield, this is live coverage of Governor Pat Quinn's State of the State address to the Illinois General Assembly. I'm Bill Wheelhouse, joined by Sean Crawford at the Illinois State Capitol. Today is the State of the State. It's not the budget address. And Sean Crawford, is the governor going to stay away from the budget in this message that we're going to hear shortly?
Well, all we have seen so far is the governor not providing a full text of this message that he plans to be giving today to the Illinois lawmakers. But what he does plan to do, apparently, is touch on a lot of accomplishments that he has made over the past year, accomplishments that he will tout, and then also, I believe, touch on the budget in certain ways, talking about the need to pay the state's bills. And, of course, he is already on record is supporting a tax increase. He proposed one last year when he took office and has really maintained the fact that he believes more revenue is needed in state government and the income tax is the best way to do it. Now, whether we're going to hear an actual proposal today or exactly how the money would be utilized if he does, if he is able to get a tax increase through, that may not be as much on the specific side from what we'll hear today. But again, I think the governor will address this issue. It is still the biggest issue really facing state government here in 2010.
And this comes a month, less than a month, before a primary election. So does this become a primary re-election speech rather than something dealing with the problems of the state? Or is this where he really lays out the bold initiatives, or do we have to wait till after the election and wait for the budget message for that?
Well, of course, the governor is required to give a state of the state message. Now, what we have seen in recent years is that some governors have coupled this with a budget message and only given one address to lawmakers. Governor Pat Quinn deciding to do two speeches this year. And, of course, that has a lot of people thinking that it has a lot to do with the fact that he is running for election and he is going to have a primary in just a couple of weeks, February 2nd. He has a Democratic opponent, the comptroller, Dan Hines, who will be in attendance, sitting right basically in the front row of the Illinois House today watching this. At the same time, I would assume it will take on some tone of, here's what I have done, here's what I've accomplished. There are going to be some critics out there who are probably going to say that he is overreaching as far as what his accomplishments have been since he's taken over for Rod Blagojevich. Remember, it was about a year ago, January 29th, that he was sworn in. So what you're going to see, I think, today or hear today from the governor is more of Rod Blagojevich. I'm sorry, more of Pat Quinn giving this speech that I am not Rod Blagojevich, and I think then touching on some of the things that he's been able to get done over the past year.
Now, is the governor making his way into the chamber yet? I noticed
he has. He was at the door, and we do know that the senators have made their way in, and the House members, of course, already in the House chamber. What happens is the senators come from across the other side of the Capitol, and they share seats in the in the House chamber and watch this. It's a joint session of the Illinois legislature. So apparently Pat Quinn is at the door and is making his way into the chamber, and we will hear that in a moment. They have shut the mics off for the time being, but we will hear the microphones come back on here in just a few moments.
I just saw that Republican Senator Kirk Dillard, a candidate for governor, has made his way there. Up in the front row, as you mentioned, Comptroller Dan Hines, the opponent in the Democratic primary against Governor Quinn, also the other constitutional officers, Attorney General Lisa Madigan, Secretary of State Jesse White, Treasurer Alexa Giannoulias, and the Auditor General of the State of Illinois, the unelected constitutional officer, Bill Holland.
And that's a typical of what we'll see at these types of addresses. We always have the dignitaries in state government who always come in and watch the proceedings. We've been told that this speech will last about 30 minutes today. Again, not having a full text, it's a little tough to judge, so we're getting that from the governor's staff, who says, give or take, it should be around 30 minutes or so. And again, probably not as big on specific programs that he's going to be pushing for in the next year. However, we do know he will be calling for a constitutional amendment, and one that will be allowing citizens to propose ethical reforms and put them into a binding referendum. Now, that takes a little more effort than just the governor calling for that. The legislature would have to go along with this as well. But it appears to be, from the material we've been given early, to be the only really new program we're going to hear from Governor Quinn today. Other things he will touch on include the Thompson Prison sale and also the capital program that was approved, the construction program approved last year, and what the governor says is really a jobs program, one that will create a lot of construction jobs around the state. There are still some concerns with that program and how it's going to be paid for, but those are the types of themes that apparently he will stick to in his speech today.
The governor is at the door of the chamber, I assume, awaiting introduction now with his Senate Escort Committee. He is going to vow to address the budget crisis, but it remains to be seen just how specific he'll get in this proposal, because whatever he says today, I assume Dan Hines's folks will be getting ready for their ads in the coming weeks before a primary election that the general public is not used to having these February primaries. So it's coming up a little sooner than expected.
And that's right. It's been a very interesting election cycle. Really on both sides, not just the Democrat, but also the Republican side as well, in the fact that I don't believe that the public has probably been paying a lot of attention to this election up to this point. The holidays have been upon us. Candidates have been holding off buying a lot of ad time, and I think they'll probably buy more of that here in the final couple of weeks. In fact, we haven't really even seen that many public appearances from even some of the front-running candidates. They've sort of played it close to the vest so far, but I would say the gloves are going to be coming off here over the next few weeks. Dan Hines, again, in the building today at the state capitol, and he is expected to give some type of response after this speech on another floor of the Illinois legislature near his office, the Illinois Comptroller. And he will probably, I would assume, find some things to talk about with what the governor says today as well. So it could be really the start of the final push toward this campaign.
And Governor Quinn making his way now into the well and on his way to the podium as he greets those dignitaries around him.
Well, thank you very much. Before I begin, I think it's important for all of us in the land of Lincoln, our state, almost 13 million people live here, and some of whom are Haitian Americans. And we know today a very devastating natural disaster has hit the country of Haiti, the people of Haiti. And I think the people of Illinois have generous hearts. And we say prayers for those victims of the natural disaster, and we ask God to help them recover as quickly as possible. And I know the people of Illinois are good and true, and whatever we can do to help the people of Haiti, we will do. And I really want to thank everyone here for the warm welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to be the governor of the state of Illinois, the land of Lincoln. It's a great honor. I know it's a trust. I believe the office of governor is one that belongs to the people. And in serving in this office for nearly a year, it's been a great honor and privilege, an opportunity to visit people all across our state of Illinois. It's a great state, a diverse state, and I believe everybody's in and nobody's left out. We all know that I assume this office under the most difficult of circumstances. The Constitution of our state was followed by our legislature, by you, the elected representatives of the people. And on the 29th of January last year, I took the oath of office. In taking that oath of office, I knew that we had a state in crisis, a state that needed stabilization, that needed an honest governor and an honest government. And I think in the past year, we've worked together, night and day in some cases, to win the trust of the people. We have to build the trust of the people. Obviously, the events that preceded my oath of office shook the confidence of the people of Illinois, and their hearts were hurting. It was our duty as men and women of a democracy, the greatest democracy on planet Earth, to come together in good faith and reform our government. And I said at the beginning of my time as governor, this has to be a year of reform. And I think in the course of carrying out our duties in the past year, we've done very well with respect to restoring ethics and integrity to our government. We understood there was a need to pass strong, tough laws to deal with honesty and integrity. The integrity of our government must always match the honesty of our people. So we went about the task. We reformed the public pensions. We dealt with boards and commissions. We enacted strong standards with respect to procurement and contracts. We reformed the behavior and enacted strong ethics standards for lobbyists as well as state employees. All of those were very important reforms and needed reforms. In addition, we took on the very difficult task of looking how campaigns are conducted and how they're financed. Never an easy subject in any place in this country or at the federal level. We came together in good faith. We worked together. We passed one law that was found wanting, so I didn't sign that law. We came together again, working together in a democracy, and enacted a campaign finance reform law that I did sign that is, for the first time, a chance to have limits on campaign contributions in the state of Illinois and much more disclosure and openness with respect to money and politics. I think that's a great achievement. I think when time is written and history is written, people will look back and say that the members of the General Assembly, together with the governor, in 2009, heard the people and enacted fundamental ethical reforms. I spoke on the day that the campaign finance bill passed the House and Senate with Sheila Simon, who was a good friend, who was the daughter of Paul Simon, who endorsed me for lieutenant governor. And I told Sheila that we didn't get the whole loaf in the campaign finance reform bill, but she immediately said we got many slices. And I think that's really how her father would look at it, and I think how democracy works. There may be more to do. I think there is. I think we do need in Illinois what I would call an ethics initiative that we would put into our Constitution that would give voters at every level of government, whether it be the local level or county level or the state level, the power by petition and binding referendum to enact ethical standards and campaign finance rules that the people feel are appropriate for all of us who are elected representatives. I'd like to see that on the ballot in 2010, on November 2nd, when those of us who are running for statewide office go before the people. I think that it's important to give the people of Illinois the tools that they need to strengthen our democracy. We have to strengthen the voters. They're the ones who count. They're the ones who pay our salaries. They're the ones who pay the taxes. And I think having an ethics initiative, an initiative solely devoted to ethics in government and campaign finance reform, that is a very important need in our state of Illinois, because democracy is a process that goes on year after year, and it's very important that we bring the people in to our democracy and let them set the rules for our conduct and our behavior. I am very pleased, and I want to commend all those in this legislature that did enact a constitutional amendment resolution that will be on the ballot this fall to establish a recall process in our state. This is the first time in the history of Illinois such a constitutional amendment has been presented to the people. It took 3/5 vote of each house of the General Assembly, both the House and Senate, and the people must enact the recall amendment by 3/5 vote. And I think they will. I think the people of Illinois know that before I became governor, we had great difficulties with two governors, one who is in jail and the other who is indicted and awaiting trial. And I think it's important always to give the people of Illinois the opportunity to cast their vote of confidence or no confidence in a governor who may be betraying the public trust. So I think enacting a recall amendment and an ethics initiative into our Constitution this year will complete the job that the people of Illinois sent us to do. When things go wrong in a democracy, what you have to use is the tools of democracy to correct those mistakes. Now, I think in the course of working together this year, we have shown that when people work together, we can accomplish great things. We can accomplish amazing things. And I think one of the things that was bad in our state before my arrival is there was much dissension, discord, disharmony, friction, name-calling. It doesn't work in life. It doesn't work in a democracy. It's very important that we always have an attitude of civility in the course of our work, that we respect all of those who are elected by the people, and that we try our very best to work together to accomplish great things. I think it's important to go over a few of the things that we've done this year that we have accomplished. And I think it is something that's important for the people to know, that their elected representatives work together on issues of very high importance to the public. And one of those issues that occurred this year was the fact that when I became governor, we didn't have all of our state parks open or our historic sites, and that the governor's mansion was rarely used. I think it was important for the people of Illinois to see that the people's house, the governor's mansion, was open to the people. And on Abraham Lincoln's birthday, his bicentennial, we had an open house at the governor's mansion. We've had many, many events. We've invited legislators as well as ordinary everyday people in Illinois, the heart and soul of our state, to come to the governor's mansion and to come to our state parks. I think it's very, very important that in this time of economic recession, we have parks available for the people. And I made sure that that happened when I became governor. We want to leave no child inside in Illinois. I believe that it's important for kids to get outside in nature with their moms and dads and with others, their friends, to see the wonders of nature. Long ago, 100 years ago, when Teddy Roosevelt was president of our country, he said conservation is the patriotic thing to do. And it's important that we understand the spiritual value of being in nature. And so our state parks are quite important to us. And I was distressed that my predecessor padlocked some of the state parks. And very early in my term as governor, I ordered that the parks be opened, and they are. And I'm glad to see that. That's just one beginning of openness in our government. We had to work together on all kinds of important tasks, one of which, a very important one that's important for our economy, is that we had to get 3/5 vote of the members of the General Assembly in the House and in the Senate, 60% of each House, to vote for what is called a capital bill or a job recovery bill, whatever you want to call it. For 10 years in Illinois, for 10 years, we did not have a legislation passed that invested in the fundamental things in our economy, like safe roads and safe bridges, like improving our water systems, like making sure we have good rail systems to get goods to market, to build our schools and rebuild our schools. There was a lot of friction, we all know it, but finally this past year, we came together, worked together, and enacted a landmark law that will really help our state today and tomorrow with respect to its economy and jobs. We invested together and worked together on that. You know, I want to commend all of those who worked on that, the leadership of the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and the membership of both parties. We understood that the folks back home, the folks who elected us, they needed us to get this job done. And we worked together to get it done. It wasn't easy. It took a lot of hard work. But that's what democracy is all about, banding together and working together. Same way, when something goes wrong in our democracy, we don't overlook it. What happened at our University of Illinois, our great state university that we're all so proud of, they had an admissions scandal that came up in the course of the year. I appointed an admissions review commission to look into it, to find out the facts. They found out the facts. I had to replace 7 trustees on the University of Illinois Board of Trustees. They elected a new chairman, Christopher Kennedy. A new president has taken office, Stan Eikenberry, who's doing an excellent job. And that's how you deal with things in a democracy. When something doesn't go according to what you want it to do, it isn't supposed to go that way, then you correct the mistake. And President Eikenberry told me not long ago that the board at the University of Illinois today is the best one he's ever seen. And it's so important that we have good leadership at all of our educational institutions. So that's what democracy is, people coming together when a problem arises, working together to solve it. Another one that we've worked on in the past year that I think should get some attention is the whole issue of foreclosure. Many of our neighbors, good people, through no fault of their own, have lost their job and they're in danger of losing their homes. We enacted a good bill that gives more time for people to get their finances together to ward off foreclosure. Another landmark bill that we passed was to help utility consumers, people who are struggling in a tough recession, paying their utility bills. We have a law now in place that I signed that helps people of very poor, modest income afford their utilities in cold winter, as well as making sure that all of us have an opportunity to use our utility bill to help finance energy-efficient improvements in our home. Yet another consumer bill, a very important one that we enacted, was to deal with the issue of denial of care by insurance companies. Many health insurance consumers have found that when they need help the most, the insurance company denies care. Well, we should have a process where there's an independent review of that, and we were able to pass that law. It's a very important law. We work together on that, and it will make sure that we have good health in our society. And I think health is important. I think every life is important. There's a passage in Scripture that says, if you save one life, you save the whole world. And this year in Illinois, a historic year, 2009, for the first time since 1921, we had less than 1,000 deaths on the highways of Illinois, the lowest number since 1921. Now, that took a lot of work. Members of the General Assembly passed legislation that was signed into law. It took state policemen on the highways, men and women who work for our Department of Transportation, oftentimes in very difficult weather, to clear the roads and make them safe. It took law enforcement at every level. It took a lot of hard work. But there was one person in particular, in my opinion, who's led the way for our great record at reducing fatalities, saving lives on our highways. He's a man, a modest man, who has always stood for public safety. He's my friend. The day I got sworn in, he called me up and said, whatever it takes to help get our state back on track, he was willing to help and serve. We passed a law this year, a very important law, that will ban texting while driving. He was the leader of that, working with Representative John DiMicco. And I want to publicly thank our Secretary of State, Jesse White. Please stand up, Jesse. I said Jesse White's a modest man. You know, we're on the eve of Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. He would be 81 this coming year. And Dr. King, as you may know, his first pastorate was in Montgomery, Alabama, the home of Alabama State. That's where Jesse White was going to school at the very time that Dr. King arrived in Montgomery. And Jesse White is a college student, joined with his friends and helped support Dr. King. They were there when Rosa Parks said she wasn't going to move to the back of the bus. Jesse White has had a life of service. This year is the 50th anniversary of the Jesse White Tumblers. Half a century of helping mentor young people and making sure they go the right way in life. So I'm publicly very grateful to you, Jesse. You've been a great friend, a great advisor. I really appreciate your help in these troubled times and helping me as governor of Illinois, and you're a great man. Thank you very much. And as I mentioned, anytime we can save a life, it's a very important thing. And I think one of my very first bills that I signed this year had to do with mammograms and breast cancer screening. We don't want anyone to be denied health measures that they need in order to save their life and make their life better. And it takes sometimes in a democracy the efforts of lots of citizens at the grassroots level to bring to our attention the need for important reforms. And that happened. One of the first bills I did sign was a bill that allows women of color, women of low income, access to mammograms and breast cancer screening. And that effort was due to the tireless efforts of two women who are with us today, and I think it's important to recognize their efforts. Dr. Janice Phillips is a doctor, a leader in the area of minority health and healthcare disparities. She's on the board of the Susan G. Komen Cure for Cancer and the Metropolitan Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force. And together with Angela Walker, who had dinner last night at the governor's mansion, Angela is a breast cancer survivor. She works for the American Cancer Society. She's focused on educating the public on the importance of mammograms and early detection. I'd like both Dr. Phillips and Angela to stand up and be recognized for their great effort. I think it's important to recognize citizens when they take their time, their effort, their ability to organize and bring together a whole community of people to get a law passed. Just imagine that. Some group of people, through their hard work, have passed a law in our state, the land of Lincoln. And I think it's very important to recognize that kind of effort in a democracy. Everybody in a democracy is important. It's not a spectator sport. It's something where all of us have a duty as citizens to participate. And I think related to that is another issue that I was very impressed with in the past year. We had a horrific scandal at a cemetery in our state, Burr Oak Cemetery. It was on the national and international news. It was a very, very horrific scandal. And it's incumbent upon all of us here in Springfield, in our state capital, to address what went wrong there at Burr Oak and may go wrong at other cemeteries in our state. And I want to commend the General Assembly for taking this issue and squarely addressing it. It's very, very important that we pass reform legislation there. That's part of working together. And I think that's the key for our state's success at all times, all of us working together for important causes. And also, another issue that came up that was a very difficult one in the past year that I think really needs attention, because it's something that we did for our country. You know, there is a passage in the third verse of America the Beautiful that talks about what we have to do for our country. And it says, "O beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country love, and mercy more than life." And I think it's important that all of us put our country above ourselves from time to time. It's very important that we answer the call to duty. And I was contacted by our president, Barack Obama, and his administration about the need to come to Illinois, to our state, his home state, to inspect a prison, a nearly vacant prison that we haven't been able to afford to open, Thompson Prison, far away from here, probably 150 miles, right on the border of Iowa. It wasn't easy. There were some that, when we even opened the door for inspection, criticized that decision. But as governor, you have to make decisions. You have to have fortitude. You have to do what you think is right. And what I tried to do when the president called in his administration is allow those federal prison officials to come to Illinois to inspect the prison. When they came through here, they found that it was an ideal prison for a federal prison that they were anxious to buy. But in order to really make this go forward in our state, I agreed that I would sell the prison to the federal government for a fair market value. But we have a process, a good process in Illinois, where legislators come together, both parties, to analyze a particular matter. And last week, that analysis was complete. I do want to thank the members of that committee that looked at the issue. In particular, I want to salute Representative Jim Sasha, who was not a member of the committee, but when he heard about the opportunity to create jobs in Western Illinois, stood forward and said that this was, upon his analysis, a good transaction for the people. I also want to salute members of the other party that I'm not a member of, but who voted in favor of the transaction, Senator Dave Severson, as well as Representative Rich Myers, and all the members who voted for that transaction. I think it will be one that will help our state in the sense that we will have more jobs in a federal prison, or maybe more than 3,000 new jobs, new income to a part of our state. And I think it's important to remember that Illinoisans, the people of our state, we are never, ever afraid of anything. We can handle any task. The decision of the committee last week to have the transaction go forward, I think is a good decision. It will help our country. As General David Petraeus has told the president, that the closing of Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba and moving those detainees elsewhere, incarcerating them elsewhere, is imperative for our national security. So when the President of the United States and his military advisors call. This governor is there to listen and to help in any way he can, and I think the people of Illinois appreciate that kind of work. And on the matter... On the matter of jobs, I think that is the matter before us all. Last year, a year of reform, a year of stabilization, I think we were enabled to enact a far-reaching law that will help us get jobs back on track in Illinois. But I want to be a governor who understands the needs, the economic needs of everyday people in our state. I have always done that as state treasurer, as lieutenant governor, and now I'm the governor. And I think that the number one issue in Illinois today is getting our economy back on track. And I think that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt said a long time ago, during the Great Depression, when my mother and father were young, that the best social policy ever devised, the best government program ever devised, is a good job. And that's what we have to understand, that our mission this year is to revive our economy and put people back to work. We can do it in the state of Illinois. I want to be the building governor. I want to build more things across our state, more good things than any other governor in state history. We have the wherewithal to do it. We have the will to do it. We have the people to do it. We have the work ethic to do it. It's very important in Illinois that we have work. We have to replace, in some of our neighborhoods in Illinois, a culture of violence with a culture of work. And we must have work available to those who are ready and willing to do the job. I've laid out a jobs and economic growth plan for our state. I want to go over a little bit of what we're going to be doing this year. We have more construction planned for Illinois, road construction, bridge repair, water investment, rail construction, helping build new schools and repair old schools. This is what we have to do. We have to prime the pump and get our economy back on track. And we can do that through public works that put our people to work. I think it's very important to understand that we have an opportunity in Illinois to make investments that will not only help create jobs today, but will set the foundation for economic growth for our state for many years to come. I want to go over today a few of the ways we're going to do that. We want to be Illinois an inland port for the whole nation. We're right in the middle of the country. Every railroad in the nation crisscrosses our state. We have great transportation. We want to make it better. We want to improve our roads and bridges. This past year, we were able to pave and repair 2,000 miles of roads. That's enough roads to go from Springfield to the Pacific Ocean. And you ain't seen nothing yet. In the coming year, we're going to do even more. We repaired 93 bridges this past year. We want to do more in the coming year. It's very important to understand that we can be an inland port for the whole central part of our country, the heart of our nation. But we have to make sure we have good transportation. We have to unsnarl some of the freight bottlenecks in our rail. We have to have good passenger rail. It's been growing by leaps and bounds. We want to keep it going. We want to have a passenger train that goes from Chicago to Rockford and beyond. We want to have a passenger train that goes from Chicago to the Quad Cities and beyond. And we also want to have high-speed rail that connects Chicago to St. Louis. You know, fast trains are the wave of the future. Our president is committed to this. Our state, we've invested $400 million. We look forward to getting a decision from Washington very soon on a high-speed rail network where our state is the center of the whole network for the Midwest. I've worked with other governors across the Midwest, both Democrat and Republican. We understand that rail can create a lot of new jobs for our state, and we're very committed to that. We're also committed to air transportation. We have to understand that there's an opportunity in Piatone to build a new airport that will serve passengers and freight and create new economic growth and jobs. And I want to accelerate our investment in the third airport this year. When we talk about fast trains, I'd like to see a fast train that goes from Chicago through the south suburbs, past Piatone, through Kankakee, all the way to our great state university at Urbana-Champaign. It's very important that we have super fast rail, and even in our capital bill, we have some resources available to begin planning a very fast train that would connect Chicago and Champaign. I think it's important to understand that as our region gets closer and closer together through transportation, we can grow our economies correspondingly across the Midwest, but particularly connecting to universities and airports and having the opportunity with rail and highway transportation to be the center of distribution for the whole middle part of our country. We want to use an inland port, that whole idea, to create new jobs, high-wage jobs in Illinois. This isn't pie in the sky. We're already doing it and beginning it in Joliet, where we are creating an intermodal that is going to create thousands of jobs for hardworking people. I also think it's important not to make little plans. We have to have big plans. We have to look forward. We cannot have a governor who just sees a day or two ahead. We've got to have a plan for our economy for the next generation. And that's why I'm committed to making sure that we have in our state the kind of biotechnology that we're capable of. We have great pharmaceutical companies in Illinois. We have great research universities. We have great hospitals. This summer in Chicago will be the International Bio Convention. It's important that we welcome them with open arms, because biotechnology in all of its forms is a great way to grow the Illinois economy. We also understand that FutureGen, a project that is on the drawing boards and hopefully close to fruition, located in Mattoon, Illinois, where we have clean coal and we do it in the right way. This is an opportunity for our state, and I want to personally thank Senator Durbin for his leadership on this issue. Hopefully we can get that investment in downstate Illinois. I also think another area that we need to improve upon, and I want to commend the legislature for your action yesterday, it's important that we understand that in the middle of the country, where people want to come to see the great sights of Illinois, not just in Chicago, but here in Springfield and all over, we want to be a hospitable place, a place for tourism, a place for history-based tourism to learn about Lincoln, a place for nature-based tourism to see an eagle fly over the Illinois River, a place to come to a convention in Chicago. And it's very important that we make sure that our conventions, our facilities for conventions at McPeer, McCormick Place, are done in the right way. So we have work to do there, we know that, but we began that work yesterday. Look forward to signing the bill that has passed the General Assembly. We want to make sure that those 303,000 jobs that we have in conventions and hospitality and tourism in Illinois multiply and grow. We have to understand that that's a good part for our state to grow its economy because of all the opportunities that exist there. A growing economy and a growing middle class, that's the key to empowerment for the people of Illinois. We have to have a governor who has a plan, who sees the future. And I see a great future in green-collar jobs in Illinois. We have to understand that we have to have a green way of thinking. We have to have a green way of thinking and a green way of acting. Sustainability is the key to economic empowerment in our country. Those are jobs in energy efficiency and renewable energy and water conservation. They will not go away. By definition, they stay in our own backyard. We have to teach young people who may be in a violent neighborhood not to take up a gun and use it against a fellow human being. Rather, they should take up a caulking gun and learn how to weatherize buildings. That's what we have to do in Illinois. I want to thank the Black Caucus and all the members of the General Assembly who led the way for a weatherization initiative in Illinois. We know we have cold weather, whether it's in January or February or other times of the year. We want to make sure that our homes and our businesses, our institutions are weatherized. We can save money for consumers. At the same time, we can teach green-collar skills to young boys and girls who want a job. They want a chance. They want to be in the middle class. That's what our country is always based on, having people with opportunity to follow their dream and get a skill that can make a difference. I really feel that the green economy, the opportunity to have energy efficiency in all of its forms across our state is very, very important as we go into this year. And that's why in the bill that you enacted and I signed, the capital bill, we have substantial investment in energy efficiency. We don't want to build one building in Illinois, one public building, one school, one university building, one kind of building of any kind without making sure that it's energy efficient, that it's LEED certified, that it's sustainable, that engages in water conservation. We have the resources thanks to the good work of people here in this assembly working with the governor. We have the resources to embark on this journey. When we build a new road, we want to lay fiber next to that road so that we can have high-speed internet, not just in some areas of Illinois, but all across our state where nobody is left out, where we don't have a digital divide, because high-speed internet, broadband deployment is the key for all of us to have better education, better health care, better law enforcement, more jobs in the future. And again, our capital bill is investing in broadband deployment. I do want to say a word about our agriculture. In Illinois, we have great, great agriculture. I had the honor of working with men and women in agriculture when I was state treasurer and also when I was lieutenant governor. There's only been one person in the whole history of Illinois who's been in this office of governor who has been voted Mr. Soybean by the Illinois Soybean Association. You're looking at him. My nickname is Soy Boy, and I understand that our whole green economy depends on a lot on our agriculture, because George Washington Carver, a long time ago when he worked for Henry Ford, got plastic out of soybeans. You can get fuel out of them, soy biodiesel. You can eat them, and it's very, very important that we understand that our corn and our soybeans are very key parts of the Illinois economy. 40% of our economy comes from agriculture. We need to honor those who till our land, who plow our fields. They're very special people. They work very hard. They have a tremendous work ethic, and I really honor all of those in Illinois agriculture. We have to work with them to grow our opportunities, to have opportunities to export our products, to take our bioproducts and convert them into plastics or other goods and services that make a difference around the world. The Shedd Aquarium is the largest aquarium in the world, most visited aquarium in the world. It's located in our state, in Chicago. They have a soybean roof. They discovered not too long ago that you can take soybeans, convert them to a paint, a white paint. You can roll that paint onto an asphalt roof like the Shedd Aquarium, 75 years old, has. And that white paint reflects the sun off the roof, keeps the fish cooler and the people cooler, and it saves money on air conditioning, and they use less electricity. That's how we can use Illinois 40 acres of soybeans in a creative way with an Illinois business that creates this white paint, soybean paint, that then is put on our institutions and saves consumers money and makes us more sustainable. We have to see how these interconnections come together. That's what I believe a governor does. He looks for ways to put people together, to work together for the common good. Related to this, the whole area of windmills and wind turbines. I think that this is something that all of us will embrace as we go through this next few years. We've invested money in our capital bill in this. We have investment also in opportunities for credit for those who develop wind power, make sure they have contracts and so on. What's important about wind power is it's clean and it's from our own backyard and it's all American. I've been to Iraq. I've been to the combat zone. I've seen firsthand how heroic our soldiers are. And I think it's our duty back home to try and be as energy independent as we can. We do not want to see our dollars and indirectly go into the hands of petro-dictators somewhere around the world who are financing terrorism. One way that we can fight back One way we can fight back is to have more renewable power in our state, from the wind, from solar, from biomass. We can do this. We have a law that this General Assembly passed, a good law, that says by 2025, 25% of our power, our energy, will come from renewable sources. We can do this. We've got to embark on it right now. We've got to build those wind turbines and do it in a proper way. And one thing about the sustainable economy or the green economy or investing in renewable energy is it brings in jobs that create prosperity. Siemens, which is an internationally known company, came to Elgin this year. They're building gears for these giant wind turbines, manufacturing in our own backyard. So we have to grab this opportunity and develop the green economy for jobs for the people of Illinois. I think there are many other ways to do this, but I think it is important as we take a look at our economy to understand that jobs follow brain power, and we can never forget that, that it's very, very important for all of us in Illinois to invest in education from beginning of life to the end of life. The Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis did a study not long ago and said the very best investment the government can make is in early childhood education. It pays dividends for generations. For the first time in our state's history, we included early childhood facilities, education facilities, in our capital bill. We're going to help build some of those buildings that those young boys and girls will learn in. A long time ago, Carl Sandburg, poet laureate of Illinois, said the birth of a baby is God's opinion that the world should go on. And if God thinks the world should go on with that baby, we better take good care of that baby. That's the way I look at it. And I think it's very important that learning begins at birth. Birth to five is a very key time for all children in Illinois. And we have to, as adults and parents, be custodians of the future. When the history of our time is written, they're not going to ask us how big our bank account was or what kind of house you lived in or what kind of car you drove. They're going to ask what you did, what we did, to help make better the lives of children. So I think as we go about our work this year, we should have this attitude that we are working for the future. We have to do hard things today in order to make our kids and their kids' lives better. That's really bringing out the best in Illinois, and that's why I believe so much not only in early childhood education, but our elementary and secondary education. We have to have high standards. We have to invest in education, but we must make sure that it's accountable education. I want to thank the General Assembly this year for passing a very good bill. It took a lot of hard work. I want to commend Senator Kimberly Lightford in particular for all the work she put in to expand public charter schools in Illinois. Well, we were able to sign that law, and I think it's going to make a difference for children who want that particular education across our state. And just yesterday, the work of the General Assembly, in very quick time, working with a lot of different people, and I want to salute Roger Eddy, Representative Jerry Mitchell, who worked so hard on getting a law passed that can make a difference for years to come, called Race to the Top, Accountable Education. We have to comply with a federal deadline of next week to get our application in for maybe up to $500 million in federal money for Race to the Top, to make sure that our education in our state at the elementary and secondary level is second to none. It's so gratifying to see so many school districts. I think there's up to 340 school districts have already signed on to participate in this program. We've got to understand that education at all levels is the key to economic empowerment. It's the best way for equal opportunity for the most people in a democracy. And that's why I believe in community colleges. We have our community colleges in Illinois bursting at the seams. Almost all of them have at least 10% enrollment increases, because community colleges are key to having a nimble economy to take advantage of the opportunities that are presented to us across the world. We have to have community colleges that give people the skills they need to compete in a world economy. And when something bad happens, when you lose your job, what our citizens in Illinois do is they don't quit. They're not gloom and doom people. They go back to school. They improve their skills. And I know this firsthand because I used to teach community college at night, and I saw how hard our men and women in Illinois want to improve their lives and continue their skills. So it's important that we invest in community college. It's very important that we invest in our four-year universities. And I think one of the great things that we did this year working together was to make sure that the MAP program, the scholarship program, a program that's been around for a half a century, that provides scholarships this year for 138,000 students, 56,000 of them go to community college. The rest go to public and private four-year universities. That program was in danger. We know that. But we came together. We didn't throw up our hands. We didn't wring our hands. We said we can get this job done, and we passed the law to make sure that the MAP program was protected. And I was so inspired when I was here that day, I believe in October, when all those students and their parents and their teachers came to our Capitol in Springfield. That was the loudest I've ever heard this building resound with the calls of students to make sure that the MAP program was protected. They were well-behaved, but they do believe in the power of democracy and the power of their own voice. And so I want to salute all of those MAP students across Illinois, those scholarship students, many of them the first in their family who have ever gone to college. We have one of them today. Kerry Ash is with us. He's a student member of the Faculty Senate over at Champaign, the university there. He helped organize the student movement to save the MAP program. And why don't you stand up and be recognized here, Kerry. We want to make sure that we have as many scholarships as possible for our students. I look forward to working with you as we go through this year at having dedicated funding for our scholarship program in Illinois. I don't think it should be ever put in jeopardy. We need to make sure it has dedicated funding, and that's a job for all of us to work on. Now, I said before that jobs follow brain power. We have some of the best universities on planet Earth right here in Illinois. And we are very proud of our universities. We, the people of Illinois, invest in those universities. Our sons and daughters go to those schools. And we want to make sure that those who graduate from our universities hopefully stay in Illinois. And it's important that we understand that we, in our educational system, are preparing those who are going to create the new businesses of the future, invent the new products, work in very complex jobs that require great skill. So education has to be part of our economic agenda to protect and grow the middle class in Illinois. We've got to understand that education and jobs go together. Now, I do want to also recognize today two young men who went to school in Illinois. This General Assembly has provided for an Illinois Math and Science Academy that's world-renowned. The students who have graduated from there have certainly made their mark on our economy and on our world. And also, these two young men went to the University of Illinois, where we have at the university, being constructed right now, the world's fastest computer. It's called the Blue Water Project. It's a very important project. It will help our economy. It's going to help education in Illinois, the fastest computer on planet Earth, the most powerful supercomputer. We're very proud of that. We have to make sure when we make that investment that we get the fruits of that investment. But these two young men that I want to recognize now are graduates of our high schools in Illinois as well as our university. One is Mike McCool, graduated in 1991 from the Math and Science Academy. He was on a team at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign that created Mosaic, the internet browser that was used to start Netscape. His colleague is Ramirez Nam, who helped develop two of the most widely used pieces of software in the whole world, the Microsoft Internet Explorer and the Microsoft Outlook. And since 2002, he served as a member of the advisory board of the Nano Business Alliance, a member of the World Future Society. He holds a degree in computer science from our University of Illinois. We've got to develop brains like Mike McCool and Ramez Nam over and over again in order to have a strong economy in Illinois, and that means investing in our education. I'd like Mike and Ramez to stand up and be recognized for their contributions. Okay, well, we all know that education is important, but we have to pay for it. And I think that's the part of the address here today where the governor, who comes by constitutional mandate in January of the year to report to the people and to the General Assembly, we have to make sure that everyone is listening to the truth. Because our state, as you know, has a severe budget deficit. I didn't create it. When I assumed office, it was $11.5 billion. We've done everything we can this year to try and manage this financial crisis. It's the worst financial calamity that Illinois has ever had, and we've been a state since 1818. We've done all things imaginable. We've cut costs across the board in Illinois. Our expenses, we're going to reduce our budget, our general revenue budget, by about $2 billion. That was the mandate of the people in the General Assembly, and we've listened to that mandate. I've cut my pay. I take furloughs like all my other workers. It's very important that we understand in tough times, those in government have to tighten their belt, and we have. We've also used the resources of the federal government that have been made available to us through President Obama's leadership. Our state and many other states, every other state, have received help from the federal government during this very difficult recession. We will continue to do that. I want to thank the General Assembly yesterday for understanding that having $250 million, the opportunity to borrow that money that we can spend on our health care, our Medicaid, can bring back from the federal government an enhanced Medicaid match under the federal stimulus. We tried to do this in December. We were blocked, but I'm thankful to the General Assembly that you saw the wisdom of doing this and yesterday passed a law that I will sign that will get us more federal money under this enhanced match for our health care. Because part of managing our budget right now is getting as many federal resources as we can. I'm going to be at the Governors Association meeting next month in Washington, where the governors across our country will come together and work with the president in the federal Congress to help our states navigate through this perilous economic time. My mom and dad, as I said, grew up in the Great Depression. We don't have a Great Depression, but we do have a Great Recession, and it's caused great, great difficulties for the people of Illinois. Our income tax and our sales tax revenues have declined precipitously during this recession. Now, we have to revive them. That's what our economic plan is all about. That's why everyone here works so hard to get a job recovery plan passed last year that we began to implement this past year. And this year, we're going to really get it going to get people back to work and hopefully have more confidence and buy goods and services that they need for their family. But it is important to know that when we have a situation where we're getting federal resources, we're cutting costs, we're using strategic borrowing where necessary. This has happened in the past. Sometimes it has to happen again in order to get our state through a tough time. As you know, there was an effort last summer by some to cut human services in Illinois during this great recession. Cut them in half. Now, I didn't think that was right, and I vetoed that budget. And we went back to work, and we passed a different budget, one that does involve some borrowing, in order to keep our human services going. What are these human services? They're things like child care, to make sure that working parents have a good place for their children to go to during the day and to learn. We have to invest in child care in Illinois. I was not going to cut child care in half. Same way with our community care, which is a great program that provides a person of modest wages to help our seniors stay in their home so they don't have to go to a nursing home. They can be in their own neighborhood, participate in their neighborhood activities, go to their local church, go to things in their community that they've been used to for years and years. Our program of community care is an outstanding one, and we weren't going to cut that in half. Same way with our persons with disabilities. They're special people in Illinois, and there was an effort to cut programs for them, slash it in half. I would not stand for it. We want to make sure that those who have disabilities have independent living and an opportunity to fulfill their dreams. And so we rejected the, I think, unwise effort to cut the budget for those with disabilities. It's very important, I think, in Illinois, even in a tough time, that we always retain our heart, our decency. We have to have a government that understands that when some people get a bad break in life, lose their job, it isn't their fault, and they don't despair. They don't think about committing suicide or engage in bad behavior, whether it be alcoholism or violence. We've got to help those people and rescue those people. So that's the part of the governor's mission, I think, to make sure we have a fair and decent budget. So we had to work on that overtime last year. It didn't end on May 31st, as you know. We went through June and then half of July. And finally, we came to a budget that's far from perfect. But it is a budget that we have to work on in the course of this fiscal year and in the next fiscal year as we prepare for the future. Now, I do believe we need more revenue. I think after cutting all the costs, after using strategic borrowing, after getting as much money as we can get from the federal government, we're still short. We have to understand that in a democracy, in tough times, it takes fortitude to look at what the facts are, not to kid ourselves. There are some who have budget plans right now that sound good if you say them fast. But when you take a look at the fine print, they're there cutting human services, cutting education, cutting health care for people who have no other health care but what we can provide through Medicaid. It's very important we not do that. I think we must be a decent state, and indeed a key to the economy in Illinois is for us to keep our human services, our education, and our health care top-notch. And so that's what I'm committed to do as governor. Now, I think what we ought to do this year, and I look forward to working with you on it, is to reform our tax system. We have an unfair tax system. We've had it for way too many years in Illinois. It relies way too much on property taxes and other levies that aren't based on ability to pay. I think there's a principle as old as the Bible, that taxes should be based on ability to pay. Nobody likes paying taxes, nobody. But in a democracy, that's what all of us as citizens do. We understand that self-government means that we have to come together and find a way to finance our government, we the people. And so I look forward to working with members of the General Assembly this year on finding a fair way to raise revenue from a fair tax code that, in my opinion, if we work together in good faith, we can cut taxes on 5 million people, maybe more, in Illinois. We can find ways using the personal exemption, using the earned income tax credit, using the property tax relief credit, to cut taxes on people who need help the most, people of modest income and poor people. It's something wrong in Illinois where our state is taxing poor people into further poverty. I think we as a state and as a General Assembly and as a governor can come together, work together, just as we did with the Capitol bill and the job recovery bill. We can do this year, not next year, this year, to make sure we have adequate revenue for important things that all of us want in government, but also do it in a fair way that doesn't unfairly tax anyone. So I look forward to doing that with you. I think it's important that we embark on this journey, and I want to assure you in the course of this year that we will continue to cut costs in government. There's only been one governor in the history of Illinois who has a Super 8 card, and I've used it as governor. I'm going to continue to use it where appropriate. I think it's important to show economy everywhere you can. And I have a VIP card at that particular dwelling place or lodging place. Now, in reducing our costs, obviously we have to be careful. And I want to focus on something that is a very important area of our government, the Department of Corrections. Has a budget of over $1 billion. It's one of the largest departments in Illinois, and it's important that it be managed properly. Now, in cutting expenses, it's important that we understand that this has to be done in a focused way. I appointed a director of corrections, a man who I have high regard for. He made a mistake. He told me that in carrying out his cost reduction plans, that if there was going to be any early release programs, 13 states across the country are engaged in these kinds of programs for low-level offenders who have not committed violent crimes. I said if that had to happen, given our dire economy in Illinois, the fact that we don't have as much money in our budget as we'd like to have, you must carry out this program with care, and it can only apply to low-level, nonviolent offenders. In carrying out that mission, mistakes were made by the director, for which he takes responsibility, and I take accountability. Like President Obama said last week, when you're a chief executive, the buck stops here. I understand that if a mistake is made in government, it must be corrected. And that's exactly what I did. The moment I learned a mistake was made by the Department of Corrections, I suspended the program. I brought into our government a very wise man, Judge David Erickson, who had served as a prosecutor, as a criminal court judge, as an appellate court judge. He now is a teacher at a law school. I asked Judge Erickson to take a look at this entire program in Illinois, Since 1978, Illinois has had an early release program. It's been authorized by the legislature, signed by the governor. It's been amended a number of times. It has a lot of complicating factors. The judge came back very quickly with a comprehensive report, and I'm happy to say that I'm carrying out his recommendations in his report. One of the recommendations is to have a chief public safety officer at the Department of Corrections to look at all releases of all prisoners, whether they be early or not, to make sure that the law enforcement officials in our state have adequate notice with respect to anyone's release. Similarly, there was a unspoken policy or rule, whatever you want to call it, at the department regarding early release. The judge recommended that that be codified into law. And that's exactly what I recommended to the Speaker of the House and the representatives here yesterday and the senators. I'm very happy that we were able to pass the beginning of our public safety reform initiative to put into law in Illinois clear rules for the Director of Corrections, who has broad authority with respect to running our prisons. Now, having said that, we have to understand in Illinois, in the last 30 years, we've gone from 18,000 inmates in the prison to 46,000. 46,000 men and women are incarcerated in Illinois. Right now, in our state, every year, 28,000 inmates come into prison and 28,000 go out. We have to deal with this issue in our state like other big states. We want to make sure our prisons incarcerate hardened criminals at all times. We have to do that. At the same time, our society has to ask itself, is the best way to punish a low-level nonviolent offender, someone who's committed a crime and has to serve some kind of punishment, is it the best way to have them go to a state prison with its cost? I think that it's important in our state that we examine this issue. I appointed last week Judge Dino DeVito to look at a sentence advisory council. It's provided for by law that was passed by this General Assembly. We're going to take a look at this. We want to make sure our prisons are always incarcerating hardened criminals. At the same time, we want to take a look at how we deal with these low-level nonviolent offenders who still must be punished. There may be other ways. There are other ways to do it, and I think that's something we need to embark on this year. So I look forward to working with you on that mission. I think it's a very important public safety mission. On the area of public safety, I think we would always be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the great, great work of our men and women in uniform from our state of Illinois and from every state. Our state, we're proud, proud of every single boy or girl graduating from high school who answers the call to duty and joins our military. We have a voluntary military in the United States of America, and as governor of Illinois, I'm commander-in-chief of our National Guard. And as you may know, our National Guard was deployed this year to Afghanistan, the largest deployment since World War II of the Illinois National Guard. And it was a very perilous assignment. I went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to watch their training and saw how arduous it was. We took horrific losses in Afghanistan. 18 were killed in action, 39 critically wounded. These are the best of the best. And I do want to acknowledge the leader of our National Guard in Afghanistan, who's with us here today. And he's a man I think very highly of. It's Brigadier General Stephen Huber, Deputy Commander of the Illinois Army National Guard. He served in our state as the commander of the Combined Joint Task Force Phoenix, an Illinois National Guard-led task force comprised of thousands of troops, including more than 3,000 from the state of Illinois. So General Huber, I met General Huber in Kabul, Afghanistan, and I saw his leadership, and I saw the men and women under his command, and they're not all young. Some of them are almost as old as me, a lot of gray hair. They're part of civil affairs. They go to a very foreboding place at the gates of hell, confronting Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in those mountains of Afghanistan, and they never, ever complained. It was just inspiring to be there with them. And General Huber, on behalf of a grateful state and a grateful nation, thank you very much for your great leadership. I think that we not only want to express our gratitude, and it was so inspiring across Illinois. I went to many homecoming ceremonies in Urbana, in Freeport, in Kankakee, in Chicago, to see our soldiers come marching home and to see them welcomed by our citizenry, the men and women of our state who understand how important it is to protect our democracy. And I think related to that is that we always in our state have to have the very best programs for our veterans. And I do think as we go through this year, we want to always make sure that the programs we have to help our veterans, our service members, and their families are always there for them. We have programs like our Warrior Assistance Program in Illinois. All of our National Guard members receive help from this. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a signature injury of this war, the two wars we're in. It's very important that any person from our state who serves in the military, when they come back home, if they have need of any kind of counseling, they get that, and we'll provide that. I made sure in our budget last year where there was an effort to cut this program that would not be cut. It will never be cut because it's very important that we take good care of those who have borne the battle. The same way with veterans care. We have a program in our state to provide health insurance for veterans who have no health insurance, who are not part of the VA system, and we're going to retain that as well. I'm happy to say that this year, thanks to the good work of the General Assembly, we're going to build a new long-term veterans home in the city of Chicago for our veterans. The first time in the city of Chicago there will be a long-term care facility for our veterans. It's very important. It's also important that we employ our veterans. It's a situation, unfortunately, where when our veterans come home, many of them, having fought for us in Baghdad or Afghanistan, have to fight for a job back here at home. That's not acceptable, and it's important that we use our program Operation Employ Our Veterans to its maximum extent to make sure that our veterans get employed. And I do want to salute Mick Yeager and the members of the Teamsters and all of those who are involved in Helmets to Hard Hats, a great program that provides jobs for our veterans upon their return. Also, we have to understand in Illinois, we cannot forget our military families. When our soldiers are deployed from the reserves or the National Guard, we have family members oftentimes living without great resource. Many of our service members, when they enter the military from the reserves of the National Guard, make a financial sacrifice. They make less in their military job than they were making in civilian life. These are our citizen soldiers. They've been with us in our country since the beginning of our country. They were there at Concord and Lexington. They're the militia. They're the ones who are always there to stand up for our democracy. So they entered the service. They're making a very modest wage indeed. Their family members oftentimes find it hard to pay the utility bills, to pay the gasoline bills, the health care bills. If the roof has a hole in it, how do you pay for that? So we have a program in Illinois, a good program, the first of its kind in the country, and it's been imitated by many other states, but we have the best. It's called the Illinois Military Family Relief Trust Fund. It provides financial assistance to all of our Guard members and reservists. It's helped thousands and thousands of families, nearly 20,000 military families in Illinois with more than $10 million. I want to thank the General Assembly for helping fund that program. I want to thank the people of Illinois for voluntarily contributing to that program through a checkoff box on our income tax. It's very, very important that we not forget that. It's also important that we honor those families who have lost a son or daughter in these conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. They come from our state. Since I've been governor, there have been 36 service members killed in action in Iraq and Afghanistan. 36 in just 1 year. There have been 270 since the war began there on September 11th of 2001. And we have families in Illinois, Gold Star families, who will never see their son or daughter again, someone they've known from the day they were born. There are no words in the English language or any language to relieve the pain of losing such a special person. I went to two funerals over the weekend, one a funeral in Chicago and another one awake in Troy, Illinois, in southern Illinois. And a grandmother of Brad Smith, Senior Airman Brad Smith, cried on my shoulder. There are no ways you could console a grandmother who has lost somebody she was very devoted to. Just like on Saturday, a young man, Sergeant Albert Ware, who was born in Monrovia, Liberia, in Africa, immigrated to our country. He was an immigrant, came to Chicago, learned in Chicago, went to school in Chicago, volunteered for our military. He was deployed to Afghanistan not once but twice, lost his life. It's important that we not forget our Gold Star parents. We have one of them here today, and I think it's important that we recognize this man and his wife and the stepmom, because Christopher Alcozier, I was at his funeral a few years ago. There was the hate group from Kansas there. They tried to disrupt the funeral. They echoed very vile epithets and had vile signs. It was a very difficult day. But Jesse Alcozier and his wife Judy and Kathy Alcozier, the mother of Christopher Alcozier, who was killed defending our country, is a real hero. He saved other people's lives. He was only 19. He played the viola, and he was a wrestler. He combined a lot of skills in life. God didn't give him a long life, but he gave him a purposeful life. And I think it's important that all of us in the land of Lincoln remember Abraham Lincoln's words at Gettysburg, 272 words. He said that it's important for all of us, the living, to honor those who give their last full measure of devotion to our democracy, to our government of the people, to our opportunity to be here, to have a democracy and make laws and make people's lives better. So I'm very grateful to the Alcozier family. I'd like to have them stand up and be recognized for all they've done for our country. I just want to point out that Jesse Alcozier is a Vietnam veteran. We all know our country didn't do Vietnam veterans right when they came home. And Jesse was listed once, missing in action. He was wounded 7 times during the Vietnam War, thought to be dead. Well, he's definitely not dead, because he testified and helped us pass a law not that long ago called Let Them Rest in Peace. We in Illinois believe in honoring all of those who have given their lives. We make sure that their funerals are reverent and dignified, and any group that seeks to heckle or disrupt a funeral, whether it be military or civilian, has to stand aside. That's what the members of the General Assembly did not that long ago. This law has worked very well to make sure that we have reverence and dignity at our military funerals. So I thank you for that. And in closing, I think it's important to understand in our state that there are those amongst us who aren't celebrities. They'll never be on the front page of the paper. They'll never be on TV. They're just the heart and soul of Illinois. Their kids are the ones who answer the call to duty. They go forward in the face of danger to defend us. They work as a team without complaint. They don't whine. They aren't petty. And I think we can take great example from those men and women. My father served in the United States Navy 3 years, 1 month, 15 days. That was the only public service he was ever involved in. He wasn't in a private job the rest of his life. He lived to be 93. God blessed him with a long life. But he always felt that that time in the United States Navy was a special time. And I think about my father here today, because when I got sworn in on this very place, I talked about my father, and I read something from his commendation by his commanding officer in the United States Navy. He said my father was earnest and cooperative and honest and cheerful, and he believed in teamwork. And I kind of think that's what we got to do in Illinois. We've got terrible challenges, the toughest we've probably ever had in our lifetime. Now, we can play politics, we can call each other names, we can kind of avoid the problems, but that's really not what our service members do when they get a responsibility. And certainly it wasn't what my father did in life. So he taught me always to work hard, to treat other people with dignity. Don't call people names. Be honest. Be trustworthy. That, to me, is what Illinois is all about. Our state, the land of Lincoln, the people of our state, they're the best of the best. We're pride of our nation. We can accomplish great things if we work together. So I look forward to doing that with you, everyone here, today, tomorrow, and every day in the future, and we'll make the will of people the law of the land. Thank you very much.
That was Governor Pat Quinn delivering his State of the State address from the Illinois State Capitol.
You've been listening to Governor Pat Quinn's State of the State address on IPR, Illinois Public Radio. I'm joined by Sean Crawford. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Sean, your impressions of the speech. It seemed like there really wasn't much new. It was a lot longer than his people predicted, but he did touch upon the economy. He touched upon taxation in a very vague, broad way, and he touched on his desire to protect social services and education, but you can't really glean a lot from that.
No, and I think that you're right. There's not a lot of substance in what we heard today. A lot of feel-good themes about investing in education or investing in infrastructure and a lot of other areas of state government. But it really does begin and end right now with the state's budget situation. I mean, we're facing the what some have estimated to be $12 billion, maybe more, of a deficit going forward. Sales tax and income tax revenues, as the governor said, have really taken a nosedive. And for right now, the state is looking for some way to either cut its way out of this situation, raise revenue, maybe a combination of both, but, you know, maybe even borrow more money. There's been talk of doing all of that. But from what we heard today, it seemed as though the governor is sticking by the plan that he proposed last year. He did not get into specifics today, but it sounded very similar to the income tax increase that he was talking about last year, which would also provide some exemptions for people who don't make that much money. So we'll see what happens. Again, it was an opportunity for the governor to tout a lot of things that he has done through the year or that the state has done, but he really did seem to gloss over some of the other problems that the state is facing and not get into those too much today.
He mentioned a need to create jobs, getting the economy back on track. We didn't hear specifics there. In terms of ethics, I guess we did get one specific, one that he thinks the citizens should be able to promote ethical proposals that could go before the voters. That's something that would have to be approved, of course, by the legislature. He reiterated his support for the Thompson prison and defended that. Was there anything that caught you by surprise?
No, I don't think so. I thought the possibility, it seemed as though he tried to walk a line at times of not attacking his Democratic primary opponent, Dan Hines. A few times he talked about people playing politics, and he did mention, of course, an effort that's underway to borrow some more money for the state, sort of a backdoor way of borrowing money. The earlier effort was blocked by Comptroller Hines. The governor says money is needed to pay down health care bills, that the state has a huge backlog of those bills right now and feels that some extra cash flow is necessary. But he didn't really, he never called him out specifically, and he never really took what I would think would be the type of shot that most people would, you know, might have been looking for today. I don't know if there were a lot of sound bites out of this type of speech either when it comes right down to it. He did say he wants to be the building governor, meaning he wants to improve the infrastructure and make sure that the state keeps moving forward despite its budget problems. But again, I think overall it was the governor talking a lot in platitudes, but we didn't really get a very much of a roadmap of where the state might be headed, and maybe that will come later. The governor still has to deliver a budget address, tentatively scheduled right now for February, although we're hearing that could also be moved a little bit later on, allowing them more time to work on that proposal.
Now, the governor did have to play a little bit of defense on the issue of the early release program for the Department of Corrections. And then he sold it that there would be new legislation that would allow the head of the Department of Corrections, the head of the prison system, to carry out so-called public safety reform. And he's kind of putting this in a context that it's going to be a budget saver. But still, it's hard to picture that a lot of budget savings in the scheme of the budget problems they're facing are going to be realized through something like an early release program.
Yeah, and it's really turned into an albatross for the governor right now in this campaign. It's probably been one of the biggest issues that has separated him and Dan Hines. And, you know, of course, being the governor, you're going to at times have issues like this pop up. Hines, of course, has been running a lot of campaign ads really attacking the governor. The governor tried to address it today. He talked as though, again, deflecting some of the blame to his Department of Corrections director, saying that this was done without his knowledge and actually in violation of some of the orders he had given, Quinn that being that he had given. But he did say the buck stops with him and says that he would take the responsibility for it and that he has suspended the program and new oversight of the program. Programs taking place, and tried to sort of clear that up today. Now, whether or not this issue still has legs as we move forward, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think that, the governor did, he didn't make this the focal point of his speech, but he did, of course, definitely put it in there to at least try to address it somewhat.
Did you feel like he was giving a campaign speech at all?
At times, I think it came across that way, and of course, we'll be joined by a couple of lawmakers of different parties here in just a moment, Republican and a Democrat, and we'll see what they have to say about this. But I felt as though that he definitely was trying to say again, as we'd mentioned at the start of the broadcast, that he is not Rod Blagojevich. That he has accomplished a lot of things in a very difficult situation. Nobody denies that Pat Quinn was put in a difficult situation taking over for Illinois' governor, who was removed and impeached from office last year, just about a year ago. But again, I felt as though this was his opportunity to say, "Hey, look what I have done." We are being joined right now by Representative Jim Durkin, and he is a Republican from Willow Springs. He is a representative, and make sure he gets his headphones on here, and we're going to get his thoughts on what took place today. What did you think of the speech, Representative?
Well, I think it was a speech which I expected. That's 3 weeks out of a primary election. It's nice to talk about things that they did, but I think I can challenge some of the things that were really accomplished. Ethics reform was not true reform. A capital plan, which still has not been implemented. But more importantly, I did not hear anything about the deficit or our pensions. And to me, those are the most important issues that the state is facing and how we're going to move forward. We can look at, I'm not going to look back in history at what we did, but the two issues that I wanted some more discussion, at least some more specificity, is how we are going to handle our growing deficit. We talked a little bit about some things that the federal government's going to give back through the family care settlement and legislation passed yesterday, but how is it going to improve our bond rating? We have vendors that are still some $6 billion in payments that they have not received. Those doors will close. More people will go out of work, and we can put people back to work through a capital program, but at the same time we're putting other people out of work because we can't pay bills to vendors. So I'm troubled, and I'm a little bit nervous about priorities, and I understand it was a state of the state address. It was not a budget address. But the fact is, the state of the state is the fiscal integrity of the state and how we're to move forward, and didn't hear anything about it.
Let me ask you this, because Pat Quinn, of course, as you mentioned, running for election, he was basically elevated to the office at the removal of Rod Blagojevich, but running to try to win the office for the first time. Is there anything in there that you heard, accomplishments that he tried to talk about, that you would agree with, that he has done, things that you feel that you would give him basically some kudos for in the time that he has been in office?
Well, I think that he did have a capital program that they did pass. It was a little late. We got past the construction season, but I thought that that was good. The other things I believe are not so important at the end of the day on getting people back to work. And I think there's some, these are nice. They were small measures. I understand that he came in under very difficult circumstances, but reopening the parks and historic sites, which is good. The governor needs to lead and needs to do it with vigilance and strength. And I wanted to hear some tough love today. Didn't hear it.
Well, there was a lot of talk about let's cooperate, let's work together. as a Republican, as somebody that's been on the opposite side in some of these negotiations, is it? Do you buy that? Do you think that that is what's going to wind up happening? And has it happened so far with Governor Quinn in his administration?
It only happens when you have the cooperation of the Speaker and the President of the Senate. And from my history in the last few years and before that, I don't think that there is this coming together of both Republicans and Democrats to the extent which they like to say it is. I firmly believe that there's really two meetings that are set up between the leaders, one between the governor, between the administration, the Speaker, and the President, which is the real meeting, and then there's another one that's done for the press shot, which you bring in Republican leaders to join in. But you know, we are not asked to participate. We're not, our recommendations are thrown to the wayside. It's only when the heavy lifting comes where all of a sudden we need Republicans. Where are you at on the income tax increase? Well, the fact is, we apparently mean something to the process, but the thing is, we're not going to jump in bed with you on a large income tax increase. Unless you allow us to participate in other ways to manage state government. We dare no discussions about reform of pensions, nothing regarding property tax relief. So, you know, it's kind of pushing things down the road, and hopefully that they can get past the election without really having to address this. And that's the rumors I'm hearing right now, that we wouldn't look at. We'll have a six-month operating budget, and then an income tax increase won't come until after November, until the veto session when you have a lame duck session. So that's the rumors that I'm hearing that are swirled around, but I don't expect any type of overhaul of our tax system, as the governor had asked, over the next 3 months. I just don't see it happening. So I give the governor credit for, saying, I want to do this, but it's only as good as you get cooperation out of the supermajority in the Senate and the almost supermajority Democrats in the House. So, and I think that right now that the political winds are moving in a direction for Republicans, so I think that Democrats are can be very cautious about putting any type of legislation, which I think the governor would want to see, up for a vote, because it could cost some seats, and that's what, at the end of the day, is what we're about.
Representative Durkin, a question. We always hear applause in some points of a speech. Which parts did you applaud for? Which parts did you withhold your applause?
I tell you what, the one that I found that was, I applauded the most for, when I felt very, it was kind of moving when we had the head of the Illinois National Guard who appeared, and I thought that was, I'll give the governor credit for his commitment towards military families in Illinois. When he was the lieutenant governor, I know that he was going to, whenever, troops were returning back from Iraq or Afghanistan, he would be there. When a soldier was lost in line of duty, he would appear, but he did not do it with press releases. He would sit in the back of a church. So I give the governor credit for his. There are the number of things, and I think the Capitol bill was good. I cheered for that, and I can't remember, but I will say that the two that I felt the strongest about was just recognizing the men and women in service, because I know the governor is very sincere and he's been very, very true about his commitment towards our National Guard.
You talked about the state's budget situation and the fact that you're hearing that maybe a tax increase is off the table anytime soon, if it will happen at all. What does that mean for the state from your point of view and from your constituents' point of view? What does it mean if the state continues down a road right now of maybe not having enough revenue to meet the expectations of these bills?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, our bond rating is lowered, and we're going to try to seek more debt. And I don't know how we're going to sell this paper. It seems there's a lot of paper that's flying out of the Springfield, but we're not backing up with a revenue source. So I'm worried about that. If we don't have a revenue source one way or the other, whether it's an income tax increase or if somebody has a creative way to find another revenue source, we're open to that. I don't know how we're going to be able to. I mean, first and foremost, I think our community service agencies are the ones that are being hit the worst. I have a number of them in my district, and they are cutting. They're taking out lines of credit. They have a reduced staff, and they provide a valuable but necessary service in our communities for the developmentally disabled and also seniors. So I don't know how we're going to be able to run a state if we are going to not find the revenue source. And I guess that's why I'm not running for governor, because I don't think anybody has a good answer. And, I think some people would, I'm not quite sure if there's been a total commitment towards reducing spending in state government. You know, last year the governor, you know, he came in difficult circumstances, first state of the state budget address, which was combined with the state of the state address. He asked for almost $2 billion in new spending. So he's now saying that we're going to reduce spending, but I didn't hear anything about some of the union contracts that are still, I think there's one of the public unions still has $220 million in raises still set to go into effect, and there's still no commitment between, I believe, the union or the administration to reopen that. And I'm at a loss of how we're going to be able to address that. But that's $220 million that can go towards paying down some of our deficit. So I don't have an answer to it. We've got a $31 billion spending program. It doesn't need to be 31. Is there a way to be able to scale that down and revisit the, in a few years and take some of that money, which is dedicated towards this capital program, to address our debt? Maybe that's something that's a concept that hasn't been discussed. So I'm trying to be creative, but I know that there's a campaign ahead, which people are afraid to talk about income tax because it's kind of the third rail. But I know that there are some Republicans who would consider an income tax, but they don't trust that the Democrats will spend the money appropriately, and that it's going to go to the wrong sources, which is basically expanding the size of state government. The governor talked about big programs, more spending. I don't believe that we need to be putting $400 million in a high rail. I'd rather have it go towards deficit. I just don't believe it. I would rather hear that speech in a year after we've talked about how we've reduced our deficit and that we are paying our vendors, as opposed to keeping, $6 billion in debt still hanging over people in the state of Illinois, and we're also going to continue on a massive spending program. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And I don't know, Bill, did you have another question you wanted to throw in there?
We have about 4 minutes remaining. So right now, you would say, Representative Durkin, that the members of the Republican House, the general broad stance is that if you can have a say in more of the process, you might be more acquiescing on things such as an income tax increase, but you have to be at the table to discuss those other issues like pensions.
Well, we have to at least be brought to the table, and our recommendations have to be taken, in complete sincerity. I mean, what happened last year with the special election on Roland Burris, that was a disaster. No one talked about that, but the fact is, they finally put a bill through that was going to call for a special election. I served on the committee that was going to, approve the legislation, and Democrats motioned to have it fail, as opposed to a do not pass. So, I mean, this is the type of things they give us, this lip service, and they go through, and they'll allow us to call a bill, and it'll be defeated in committee, and they'll say, we gave you a hearing. Or if they pass it in the House, there's a wink and a nod in the Senate to make sure it never gets called over there. So they're trying to be creative in saying that we're giving the Republicans participation, but the Republicans, one, will not are not going to engage in any type of discussions regarding tax increases unless there's sincere efforts about reforming our pension systems and about ensuring that we are getting back on track with paying our vendors. And I mean, we have Republicans who some I think would be willing to vote, but we have a lot of Republicans who just flat outright aren't going to vote for an income tax increase. But you could get some Republican votes if you can show that you are that revenue enhancements are going to go to the right places, and that is the going to deficit, and that it's not going to be used for any large-scale future project until we get our house in order. So these are things that I think I can say that a number of individuals have talked about. They don't trust and the pension system, for one. I mean, we cannot. I mean, it's already collapsing under its own weight. And until we and the only way we can move forward on that of having a viable pension system is creating a second tier. And that is something that should have been done last session. The House has 70 Democratic votes. The Senate has a supermajority votes, and they can't even get that accomplished. So I want to try to be optimistic, but until there's a sea change in the election next November, we're not going to see any movement.
Okay. That's Representative Jim Durkin. He is a House Republican. We do appreciate him joining us for some post-speech analysis today.
And you have been listening to coverage of the State of the State. The address from Governor Pat Quinn. This is Illinois Public Radio in Springfield. I'm Bill Wheelhouse, joined by Sean Crawford. You're listening to IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. We break away now from Illinois Public Radio coverage to continue coverage, however, of the Governor's State of the State Address here on Illinois Public Media with commentary and analysis from three veteran State House observers. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I welcome your questions and comments for guests Mike Lawrence, Charlie Wheeler, and Rick Winkle. Join us with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Joining us on the phone from Springfield this afternoon are Mike Lawrence and Charlie Wheeler. Rick Winkle is with us here in the studio. Former State House reporter Mike Lawrence is a columnist for the News Gazette and the State Journal Register and serves on the board of directors of Illinois Issues magazine. He retired in 2008 as director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. Charlie Wheeler is also a former State House reporter who now directs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois, Springfield. Rick Winkle is the director of the Office of Public Leadership in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs and an adjunct professor in the College of Law. He's a former state lawmaker, having served in both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly. Again, the phone number is 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Glad to be here.
What do you make of the lack of mention until very late of the budget situation? Was the governor well served by focusing on what he focused on this afternoon?
Well, I'm not sure there was a focus to this speech. Mm. He did not use a teleprompter. He went from notes. He went for over an hour, and he really touched on many, many subjects. It is not unusual for a State of the State address to be kind of a laundry list of accomplishments and proposals. But I felt this speech was particularly lacking any specifics. And it may well have been attributable, Celeste, to the fact that, in my memory, this is the first time a governor has given a state of the state address when people were voting already in a primary election. So I think that was a big factor. He's being challenged in the primary. He has a serious challenge. And I think that was a big factor in shaping his remarks.
Thanks, Mike. Charlie, what about you?
Well, it struck me that, as Mike suggested, this is vintage Pat Quinn, kind of stream of consciousness, one thought kind of segueing into the other. It was clear that he was doing this almost off the cuff. I don't know if any of the listeners were also viewing his speech, but you could see occasionally he would, when he first arrived at the dais to give his speech, he removed from his breast coat pocket a couple of sheafs of folded papers, spread them out, and periodically he would look down to see kind of where he was going next. It was like he had an outline, but it was not at all scripted. And as someone who's listened to Pat Quinn over the years many times, I heard a lot of those thoughts before. For example, the Shedd Aquarium roof made with soybean paint. Mm. That's a line that I probably heard from Pat Quinn half a dozen different times at various occasions. The thing that struck me, and Mike alluded to this too, this does come at an unusual time with the primary less than 3 weeks away. This is going to be the earliest primary ever in state history. And he is locked in a bitter contest with Dan Hines, the state comptroller for the Democratic nomination. And he's also got a plethora of Republican candidates out to get him later on. And so he touched on a lot of the things that he's proud of that occurred. A lot of them dealt with consumer protection. Some of them talked about the sustainable green economy. And it wasn't until the very end that he hit on what are probably the most problematic things, the state's finances and also the fiasco with the early release program. And to be honest, I wasn't sure that he really would mention the budget at all, because he is at some point within the next several months going to have to come out with specific proposals for what he wants to do. So I guess I would give him credit for not being afraid to go there.
Yeah. Rick Winkle?
Well, I was struck by the same things, of course. I mean, he did talk about reform. You know, that certainly wants to tout as an accomplishment, a jobs bill, the capital bill, talking about high-speed rail and tourism, green jobs, ag, education. But, of course, these are just simply broad conceptual outlines that there was very little specificity, little substance to it. I think, though, that when he did touch on the budget aspect of it, it was, I think, kind of interesting, because what the governor, as the leader, and who's going to be giving us a budget address in just a few weeks, told us what was off the table as far as he was concerned, as far as budget cuts. Now, he's saying now that we need $2 billion in cuts, and he's talked about pay cuts. You know, I guess he's talking about furloughs. You know, those of us in state government can certainly understand that, and staying at lesser expensive hotels. But that hardly addresses the structural deficit that we're talking about here. And then when you talk about, you know, in any budget plan, human services, health care and education being off the table and reducing GRF by $2 billion, where in the world does it come from? And then, you know, that to me, you start locking yourself into a position where you're saying, yes, we need cuts. We need a lot of it. But you can't cut these. And so you're very, very limited as to what actually could be out there for cutting. And then just broadly saying that we're going to reform the tax system with tax credits and maybe some property tax credits. And we're going to do it after the primary, apparently, and maybe even later than that. So, no, you don't get a lot out of this speech, not as far as any specifics. And as far as the state of the state, I'm not quite sure which state we're talking about. It's more in the mind of the governor than an actual assessment of where we actually are, if you don't talk specifically about the budget and where we're going.
After the primary, the general election campaign will be engaged. So what does that mean in terms of addressing the state's fiscal disaster here? It seems to me that we're looking way ahead to addressing these very serious problems. Mike?
Well, I'm not optimistic that our fiscal problems, actually I'd call it our fiscal disaster, is going to be addressed before the November election. And I'm only a little more optimistic that it will be addressed squarely after that. I would never have imagined that governors and general assemblies would have allowed the state to get to this point, and yet it has happened. And again, the governor addressed the budget situation, but he talked for over an hour, and I would imagine about 5 minutes of it dealt with the budget. And as Charlie indicated, that's understandable because, you know, he's going to be giving a budget address. But even when he talked about increased revenue, he cast it more as tax reform, and he even threw in that he thought we could get to a point where taxes were actually cut for 5 million people, if I heard him correctly.
Well, you know what I think he was talking about there? I think he was talking about the same rationale that he used when he unveiled his plan last year to increase the personal exemption, tripling the exemption from $2,000 to $6,000, which he said would relieve the tax burden on, I think it was something like 5,000 taxpayers, or whatever the number was that he used.
Yeah, I may have heard wrong, but I thought he said 5 million.
Well, yeah, and it would have been 5 million. I misspoke because Remember he said that half of Illinois taxpayers would pay less under his proposal to increase the income tax rate by 50%, but to triple the personal exemption.
Yeah, I remember that,
and I think that's what he was alluding to. Another thing I picked up there that I don't know if I'm reading too much into it. Last year when he proposed the income tax increase, he talked about reforming the tax structure and providing relief for middle and low-income taxpayers, and it was only with the exemption. This time he also mentioned increasing the earned income tax credit and providing additional property tax relief through the income tax credit for property taxpayers. Those are both components of the legislation that the Illinois Senate, to the credit of John Cullerton and the Senate Democrats, passed last spring, which has been languishing in the House. So I wonder if he's signaling that he is going to kind of move away from his plan, which got a vote and only received, I believe, 42 affirmative votes in the House, and instead sign on to the plan that's been put forward basically by the coalition that's been around for, what, half a dozen years behind the idea of increasing the income tax, expanding the sales tax base, providing tax relief to moderate and low-income taxpayers.
And Rick Winkle, do you want to weigh in here, and then we'll take a call.
No, I think Charlie's right. I think that the governor did not get very specific about his plan, did not reiterate his plan, rather gave some broad outlines here and left open the possibility of negotiation. I guess what really concerns me is, I mean, the focus on the tax increase or reform, whatever you want to call it, but then taking all the tax cut possibilities virtually off the table, the ones that really are the largest. And not even mentioning the pension problem and the elimination of the structural deficit. I mean, that to me, I think, is pretty telling.
Let's take a call now from a listener on line one in Champaign. Jason Croft, our technical director, is getting that caller on the line now. Line one, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And my question is for Mr. Winkle. I found it rather disconcerting that our governor took such great pride in getting the MAP grants restored. And my son, who is on student aid out here at Parkland, they don't even list the MAP grant on his form now because financial aid said to me, until they figure out a way to pay for it, we can't produce it for the student. I will hang up and listen to you, but could you maybe help me understand why he's speaking in such glowing terms about getting that returned when in effect it's not going to benefit the student? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call.
I think what they're talking about is establishing a reliable and predictable revenue stream. And that's the problem with all of the programs he talked about today. Frankly, the capital program is in the same boat, where you base it on video gaming and you have the opt-outs that are occurring all over the state. And the reason why this is so slow in rolling out the capital program is the lack of a predictable, reliable revenue stream. Until we have this kind of revenue stream, we're cobbling together budgets, maybe six-month budgets to kind of get us through an election cycle, and then maybe really addressing what we really need to be doing in terms of cutting costs and also then generating revenues to pay for programs like the MAP grant in a reliable, steady revenue stream. Right now, these kind of revenue streams are in jeopardy and frankly, may not even exist.
Well, I think what happened with the MAP program was the legislature, in essence, sent Governor Quinn an appropriation package that included twice as much as could be spent. And they gave him authority to allocate funds rather widely, something to the tune of $3 billion as he saw fit. One of the things that he did not see fit to do was to provide full-year funding for MAP. And so when the legislature came back, they increased the authorization, but the dollars are still not there. And that's the situation in which the caller finds her family, in that, yes, on the books, you're eligible, but there's just not any money to pay for it. It would be like me saying, I'm going to take a trip around the world this year, but I don't have any money to pay for it.
Yeah, I was struck by the fact he highlighted that. I wasn't surprised, but that he went on and on about it because they didn't pay for it. And another part of his remarks, he cited the Illinois Science and Math Academy and one of the graduates from that academy and all that graduate had accomplished. And just a couple of days ago, there was news that the Illinois Science and Math Academy is struggling because the state's not making payments to the academy in timely fashion. So, again, He gave one side of the picture without really giving the other side, and in that way, I think he did a bit of a disservice to the people of Illinois who were listening. Yeah.
Standing behind the governor today were the two leaders, Michael Madigan and John Cullerton. Michael Madigan, arguably the most powerful man in the state of Illinois. What's at stake for him in this situation? Is he covered in Teflon, or could this eventually hurt him?
The only way that Speaker Madigan is hurt in the sense of a political hurt is if he loses control of the House. And right now, you know, if you're talking about tax increases before the primary, if you're talking about cutting human services or health care programs, you're jeopardizing his members and their reelectability come February 2nd. And I think that retaining majority in the House and this, President Cullerton in the Senate faces the same thing. But maintaining control in the House is the number one priority for the Speaker. The Speaker's job is secure, his own reelection. But his majority is not necessarily he's got a near supermajority now. But the problem with the February 2nd primary is that it is so early. We could have a bad weather. There's a lot of people, really, frankly, not paying attention to it. I think we could have a terribly low turnout. And when you have people that are angry and frustrated, their services aren't being paid for, and if there's even a hint of tax increase or service cuts, then there could be a backlash. I think that, if I'm one of the legislative leaders, that's what I'm concerned about immediately.
Well, Celeste, I think, too, it's important to point out, as far as the prospects before the November election, that the Republican candidates and Republican legislators have not really set a very good context for the Democrat majority to act. And what I mean by that is many of the candidates, Republican candidates for governor and for legislative offices, have been going around saying we don't need revenue increases. They've been very vague about what kind of cuts ought to be done. They've been saying, well, all we need to do is grow the economy and do some cuts and we'll get out of this. And I think it is important that we do cuts. I think it's important to grow the economy, but we're also going to have to increase revenues because of the size of the deficit. So you don't have the kind of atmosphere where Democrats are going to feel politically comfortable pushing ahead on this when you've got Republicans out there saying we don't need revenue increases.
And I personally think that anyone who would argue that we can cut our way out of a budget deficit that is approaching or maybe even exceeding now 50% of the total spending from the general funds is either an idiot or a liar. And if that's too harsh on the Republican gubernatorial candidates, I would challenge them to specifically lay out where are you going to cut this amount of money. You hear this talk about tightening belt and, oh, well, the legislature shouldn't have gotten a pay raise or lawmakers shouldn't charter planes back and forth. The fact of the matter is, if you were to eliminate the legislative branch entirely, do away with it totally, you'd save about enough money to cover 3 days of Medicaid spending. Medicaid spending is the biggest item in the state budget, and it's an item that I think most people would not want to severely chop because the majority of the dollars are spent for senior citizens in nursing homes and to provide care for people who are extremely disabled. That's where the money gets spent. By the same token, the bulk of the money that we send to local school districts goes to general state aid, and it's a pass-through. The state appropriates the dollars, and Rick, you know that better than I, being a former legislator, and it's sent to local school districts who then spend it. The overhead for the education apparatus at the state is a tiny, tiny fraction of the state's overall commitment to elementary and secondary education.
What are business leaders in the state saying, thinking about where we are and the down the road impact that this fiscal situation could have on the economy in the mid and long term?
Well, business leaders like predictability and stability above all. And right now we have the most unstable budget situation by far the state of Illinois has ever had. So my view is that business leaders are looking at this situation and they're very concerned about what they may have to pay down the road. What I've heard from business leaders is that even though they're not crazy about tax increases, they would support tax increases if there were serious efforts to control spending, to cut spending in areas where particularly there is high growth, figure out ways to do that. And also, if the General Assembly and the governor would step up and move resolutely to address this deficit. And I think Rick alluded to it earlier, the pension obligations that the state has and the unfunded liability. So I have not heard business leaders saying we don't want to pay higher taxes. You know, they're not in love with that. But what the main concern I hear again is the lack of predictability.
Mike, I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think that they want that predictability, they want that stability. There's no question about it. But what has to happen here is the fiscal discipline has to be in place. And I can remember very vividly during the 90s when then Governor Edgar made it very clear, and Mayor Daley would chide him as and describe him as Governor No, that he did hold the line on spending and made it very clear that that was a hallmark of his administration. And I think that's what Pat Quinn or whoever the next governor is has to make clear to the people and to the business community, that there is that sort of fiscal discipline. And I agree with Charlie. I mean, the whole notion that, you can get your way out of this by simply making some cuts and growing the economy and not having to raise taxes is not true. And I agree with that. But in order to get to the point where you have this revenue increase, the tax increase, to have it justifiable, you have to have this fiscal discipline in place in a very predictable and stable way, but enforceable also.
And at that, we're going to have to wrap it up. We're out of time this afternoon, but we'll come back to this topic maybe within a month's time or so, as the governor is tentatively scheduled to deliver a budget message next month to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly. I want to thank our guests this afternoon, Rick Winkle, who was here with me in the studio and on the phone with us this afternoon from Springfield, Mike Lawrence, and Charlie Wheeler. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication, thanks to a generous gift from Robert and Alice Campbell.